My guest at this time is retired U.S. Army Green Beret and Lieutenant Colonel Scott Mann. He served in special operations for 18 years and as a Green Beret for 15. We want to get his insights into what will win the fight against ISIS in that region and against its disciples in the United States and around the world. And Colonel, thanks very much for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me on. It's an honor to be here. I appreciate it.
Before we even get into tactics, there seems to be quite a bit of, I don't know if confusion's the right word, but maybe disagreement about the pecking order in the region. For the longest time, it seemed like the Obama administration's top goal was to remove Assad in Syria, but we just hear from Secretary of State Kerry that regime change is not our policy there anymore. Others, of course, believe ISIS is the greater threat. How should we prioritize?
Well, I do believe that ISIS is the greater threat. I don't think the Obama administration has done a good job of laying out the threat and prioritizing how we should come at this. And as a result of that, this thing has morphed and evolved into a million different angles, and it's really confusing. But I think if you just step back from it and look at what poses the greatest threat to the United States and its interests, both in terms of will and capacity, I think it's unequivocally ISIS. So we are going to have to deal with Assad because he galvanizes folks against him in a way that allows ISIS to thrive, but it's not the priority that ISIS is in terms of a threat to the homeland. I hope that answers your question.
Sure it does. One of the things that the Obama administration has done, little by little, is increasing the amount of special operations deployments, which is obviously a topic you know well. And the idea is for them to be coordinating, doing training, perhaps assisting, whether it's Kurdish forces or if we can gather, I know your priorities, to get Sunni tribes to do the fighting, indigenous folks there taking on the threat to the region and defending their own land there. What would an effective collaboration look like? What's the smartest approach?
Well, I think, thanks for that question, and it's a thoughtful question. And I think what it looks like, as I talk about in my book, Game Changers, is it's a bottom-up and a top-down approach. So one of the problems I have with what we're doing now is this incremental build that we're doing. It's almost like we're just trying to demonstrate that we're doing something, and then we do a little bit more. I think what we have to do is we have to step back and recognize the way that ISIS and Al-Qaeda and their ilk operate is they go into areas that are beyond the reach of a fragile government, and they co-opt and manipulate tribes and clans at a community level. And that's how they set up their shop, and that's where they're most vulnerable. The only thing that I have seen work in the almost 15 years of this war is when we do something very similar, where we come in at a bottom-up kind of way, at a community level, and we empower resilient leaders to push back from the inside out and push those guys out. Now, whether that's in the Sunni areas of Iraq, the Pashtun areas of Afghanistan, or even here at home, finding and empowering resilient leaders to push the agitators and extremists out from the bottom up is extremely effective, and frankly, the only thing I think will work against them.
Colonel, some folks may be listening to that and thinking, well, the Obama administration just admitted that it tried to train Syrian rebels, and they ultimately ended up with only a handful of successfully trained folks. So that seems to be a flop. Where are we going to find these people?
Well, it's actually not the people. It's actually the approach. And if you, again, in my book, Game Changers, one of the things that I talk about are the principles that make this thing work. I mean, the first thing is you should remember is when you do this kind of local approach is first, do no harm. If you're not willing to live and work in these dark, tough areas where ISIS and Al-Qaeda set up shop, then you shouldn't even do this kind of program. And that's exactly what we did in Syria. We basically brought in and recruited, you know, marginally vetted groups. We trained them behind the fortifications of where our troops were. And then we basically launched them out and said, have a nice time storming the castle. Well, you get what you pay for on that. If you're not going to invest and live and work amongst those tribes and clans as you're working with them, I mean, that would be the same as if you went into a community, any community, and just basically trained them up and turned them loose. You never know what you're going to get on that. In fact, it's less helpful. So we have to be willing to live and work among these populations for pretty long periods of time. And if we do that, it will resonate and it will stick.
The other thing that, of course, well, there's many other aspects to this, but another aspect of the influence ISIS is having is its ability to recruit, especially through the internet, whether it's social media or other avenues online. That's becoming increasingly difficult for us to find, and police, especially when you factor in devices like the Wii, that's very hard to track from outside. And there are new ideas being floated about this. Donald Trump is suggesting, it seems, to take down certain portions of the internet, which did not fare very well as an idea at the latest Republican debate. But that's obviously one of the most dangerous aspects of their operation. So how do we effectively counter that?
Well, first thing I want to point out is that the bottom-up local strategy that we were talking about is not a silver bullet. It's not the singular solution, but it's a very powerful one. Then another one that's one of my game changers in the book, and I talk about this in Chapter 10 called Tell a Story That Sticks, which is dealing with the narrative. Look, any kind of top-down approach that we try to do, whether that's shutting down the internet or whether it's putting 200,000 boots on the ground or projecting a Jeffersonian democracy down and into these areas, it's not going to work. It's just going to mobilize them against us and reinforce the ISIS narrative that Islam is under attack. The better way to do this is to actually go after the narrative, this global narrative, and one, hold a mirror up to ISIS like Frank Capra did with the Nazis in World War II and why we fight, and show what they really do. I haven't really seen us do that yet. And number two is, what is our narrative? What do we stand for here in America? How are we working with the majority of Muslims around the world to help them protect their religion that's frankly being hijacked by a Tolkien's version of modern-day orcs? I mean, these guys are manipulating and hijacking a religion, and frankly, we're in a position where we're working with moderate Muslims to defend their religion, and we're not telling that story. That's how you defeat them and render them irrelevant, not shutting down the internet. It's just not going to work, and it's not enforceable.
How do you do that from the ground up if there's not a concerted effort, a coordinated campaign to take down their ideology and build up an alternative? Who's to lead that?
Well, look, we need a new level of collaboration. One of the things that I saw late in the war was when we put the Village Stability Program in place in Afghanistan, it was amazing. All of the disparate agencies and disciplines that actually galvanized around this bottom-up approach and came together from across all kinds of gaps and seams. And I believe we need an unprecedented level of collaboration, both formal and informal. And it's not going to be easy. It's really not. I mean, we're going to have to find true believers and catalysts in all of the, you know, alphabet soup organizations in the U.S. government. We're going to have to reach out to folks at local levels in these safe havens as well as the government levels. But we're going to have to start collaborating and using social media and get out of these hierarchical stovepipe layers that we have right now to tell stories and to build narratives and to just communicate what we're doing. We can build, I believe, collaborative tribes the same way we do in a global economy to cooperate and move forward on things we can agree on and hold a mirror up to ISIS. I don't think it's as hard as we make it out to be, and anything is better than nothing.
What about on in terms of entry to the country? Obviously, you've got the Trump proposal, about temporary ban on all Muslim immigrants. Then you got some say from the most dangerous countries with the largest radical populations. Others say, Look at the case of San Bernardino. We had someone get through the spousal visa without a red flag popping up. We just heard the Department of Homeland Security this week admit that it refused to allow folks to look at the Facebook postings of the female terrorist in San Bernardino. From that perspective, what's the right approach, you think?
Well, the first approach is to recognize that ISIS does indeed represent the greatest threat to American national security, and they are here. And in my professional opinion, they are mounting a campaign of violence against America. And based on their professed ideology, most recently reinforced in two videos in the last 2 weeks, they've made it clear they're here and they're coming. And they're going to keep escalating violence. We've got to consider that when we look at our immigration policies. I mean, for starters, how about securing the southern border? How about just an honest look at our immigration and our visa policy as it currently stands in relation to what terrorists are exploiting now, what we've learned. And you know, it wouldn't take a lot to just make some common sense changes in how we allow folks to enter the United States now. I also think we may have to get a little bit draconian on some of the point of origin countries like North Africa and Syria and Pakistan until we sort this out. I do not believe it would be a good idea to ban Muslims from the country because it plays into the ISIS narrative that there's a line between Islam and everyone else. And frankly, it's not an enforceable policy. There's no way in the world TSA could prevent Muslims from coming in. That's a choice. That's a religion. So it's not an enforceable strategy. But there's a lot we could do on the front end in relation to immigration with just common sense and get rid of this political correctness, because the threat is here and it's growing.
Last topic, and obviously it's coming closer to home, as you mentioned. They're here, and they have plans to attack. So remaining vigilant while also not letting them alter our daily lives or leave us in a perpetual state in some way of fear, how do we strike that balance?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, what you, well, you stated what's critical. You know what I've been talking to a lot of folks who were alive during World War II. You know, because I think that was the last time we really faced an enemy of this caliber that represented this kind of just, you know, dire threat to the nation. And you look at World War II. On the one hand, you had Americans that were fully committed to defending the nation. They were growing victory gardens. You know, they were rationing food and products. But yet, on the other hand, we had Japanese civilians in internment camps. And, you know, there's a lot we can learn from that era. And I think what we have to prevent against, we cannot allow ourselves to play into this ISIS narrative that it's a holy war or that it's a war against Islam. And even though it seems in many ways that many of the Muslim population may be mobilizing or at least tacitly sympathetic, we can't allow ourselves to get caught up in that. That is a false narrative, and they're playing us. Everyday Americans, what I would encourage them to do is first and foremost learn what ISIS is about, what their strategy is, how they operate. You can watch their November 24th video entitled No Respite, Google that, and also pick up my book, Game Changers, and at least read chapters 1 through 3, because it lays out exactly what they're doing.
Colonel, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you very much for your time and your insight today.
Thank you so much, and I look forward to talking to you again.
Absolutely. Retired U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel Scott Mann. He's also served 18 years in Special Operations, 15 years as a Green Beret, also the author of Game Changers. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.